Welcome, gentle travelers, to the realm
I love
of
her
the Duat.
Duat.
Confirmed!
Magician of the world. This is Tawelic.
Duat, okay.
To get something, right?
Duat,
A. What are you feeling? Hippolyte. Am I awake?
Pinch yourself.
Oh, okay.
Right, this is I love the ears wiggling.
I know, so
he's
so cute.
Afterlife, not the afterlife.
Oh.
You'd be surprised how many intersectional planes of untethered consciousness exist.
Yeah.
Like the ancestral plane. Oh, just gorgeous.
Oh! Shout out to Black Panther.
That's so cool. They said this wasn't gonna connect.
Right?
My mind is racing with everything. Moon Knight is doing such cool world building.
Right?
I love
I hope
this
she
show.
Passed.
Oh, that'd be great. Get bossed in here. No.
No. Oh, no, 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 no! Steven!
No! Steven! Floor is lava. You see the guy's body.
No
totally
time for
bad.
That, bro. Bro, come
He's
on,
okay.
man.
He's okay.
Come on, bro. Come on, bro.
Oh, he's... It's like Bing Bong and Inside Out.
No, don't bring that up, man.
No. Oh, no. Take it to the moon for me.
No.
Take it to the moon for me, Mark.
No,
take it to Coach
Bing
Bong.
No way.
Who's the one who laughs and plays? He shows... Oh, no.
Not the Bing Bong. Oh.
Bang bong, bang bong.
Bing bong, Ma. I'm Steve.
Oh, no.
This sucks.
I can't handle this episode.
This and the season.
Oh my god.
Holy shit.
What okay. an episode.
What an episode.
Episode
indeed. Holy moly.
So much to talk about. Whoa. So welcome back to New Rockstars. Moon Knight Episode 5 confirmed our theories that Mark's mental hospital is in fact the Duat to the Egyptian underworld, one of many MCU afterlives alongside the ancestral plane. Oh my god. Which also an episode that makes us really pissed off at Mark's mom, Wendy, but also at least a little pissed off at his dad.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. But this leaves Steven bing-bonging into the sand of the Duat while Mark watches the sunrise over a grateful field of reeds. But is Steven gone forever? If so, God damn it!
Not Steven, no.
Not Steven. Latest Gaitas.
Latest
this Gaitas. This is Inside Marvel. It's our weekly reaction show to Marvel's Moon Knight. I'm Eric Voss. My Easter egg breakdown will be on the channel tomorrow. But today, I am reacting to this episode with MT. MT, thoughts, impressions, feelings. Where
Bro,
are you at?
This episode was heavy. This was obviously the heaviest episode of Moon Knight that we've ever gotten. And... huge content warning. I mean, obviously, if you see this episode already, you already know the deal. But like, man, if you haven't, content warning for sure, because this is gonna get really intense.
Yes, hard to watch at some point. I mean, not like cringy bad. This is like dealing with some heavy issues of child abuse, of just triggering psychological breaks, watching a kid have to go through. And that's often the case with people who suffer DID. It is a childhood trauma. So just to see this on screen of a kid, I can't even, it was hard for me to watch, for sure. It brought back some painful memories. It brought back, not necessarily childhood trauma like this, but just... to see a kid have to go through any kind of suffering is really hard. And and kudos to that young actor who played young Mark Spector. And kudos to Marvel for going to this place.
Yes.
Because while not everyone watching this is DID, I think people can relate to childhood trauma in some way. And it's not something you can just bury, unfortunately.
Yes, for sure. And also, shout out to Ethan Hawke. Like, he's like...
yeah.
Playing multiple characters. I love how the show allows these actors to play different characters because, like, he's just, like, in this, like, I honestly felt like he was an actual caring doctor. I was like, oh my god, do I hate you less? Like, what's going on here?
I love how, like, it seems like the game is up at the end of last episode. Like, oh, we're now in a mental hospital, but Arthur Harrow is still like, no, we're still gonna play the delusion game. Like, I love the fact that they kept that that room intact because it keeps us guessing about the reality.
Exactly.
Like, we think it's the underworld, but it's like, is it the underworld? I thought it was a smart move to structure that inner reality within the inner reality, the realm within a realm that keeps the game going, just to manifest Mark's inner self-doubt. And to keep that Jeff Lemire spirit alive, despite the fact that we're in this fantastical plane. All right, Let's recap what happened this episode. So at first we jump from Mark and Steven and Tara White screaming to Mark back. Well, at first his mother screaming at him, just to give us a little tease. And we get a sense of the cave in the opening moments. But Mark is now back in Harrow's office with fresh bruises on his face that were not there before, which I thought was interesting. We never see how he got punched in the nose there, how his nose, it looks like it was broken. It was bandaged up and it was bleeding. So yeah, just implying that there's some other interesting element going on there. We'll talk about that. But even within this Duat's realm, Mark still experiences rifts in consciousness and goes back to this prison within a prison with Harrow. And Harrow suggests that even Tuaret is a delusion. But when Mark brings up this boy that he's been seeing, that's the moment that Mark picks up a sharp paperweight that we all warned about. You don't have sharp objects like this lying around in a mental hospital. And he gets medicated. But I just love that we start here. Like, there's the screaming. There's the other past memories that we start with. But, like, the first real scene is this moment where it's like, no, we're still second-guessing what the nature of this reality is. Is it the delusions of a mentally ill patient? No, I think by the end of this episode, I believe that the Duat is a real thing. I think it's a smarter move to do that. But I think just the fact that the person who manifested the nature of this afterlife, I also love the idea that afterlives are subjective in the MCU. Such a cool idea that they're going with. Yes. In this case, it's from someone who's suffering DID. The nature of that afterlife is this inner room populated by a subjective subconscious projection who continues to make him question even that afterlife. Mm-hmm. It'd be like if what's his face? Eric Killmonger goes back to his Oakland apartment with his dad, right. But then in one of the rooms in his apartment was just some like childhood bully who says, "Yeah, you had to beat me in hoops instead of defending your old man in your house." Like, how cool would that be?
Why couldn't you beat me faster?
Yeah.
Why couldn't you ball good enough? He could have helped you. Yeah.
So mean. It was so, why does my mind go to this place of how things could get meaner for the characters? I don't want that to be the case. That's probably some issue I have to work on. Anyway, so we're back with Tuaret, and she reveals that this realm is indeed the underworld called the Duat, and one of many MCU afterlives. She brings up the ancestral plane of Black Panther, which I think is such a great touch point for everyone watching the show, because, yeah, I think a lot of people have seen Black Panther, and that is one of the few other times we've seen the afterlife depicted. And just mentioning that gives us a sense of what we're now watching. The fact that, you know, you've mentioned in the past, yeah, we talked about here, the Oakland apartment was different than the Savannah meadow with the panther goddesses in the tree. I think it is different for each person who enters this space. And I think that's really cool, like a cool way of doing it. Also, at least creatively, door opening in the MCU. I can't wait to see what the afterlife looks like for everyone,
right?
Who goes through something like
that.
It's
gonna be dope.
We learn that this is all on a ship that is passing through the sands of the Duat. And the sands represent the permanent afterlife. And Tuaret plucks out their hearts, which are stone.
I guess.
And then she weighs them on an Anubis scale against the feather of truth. I love that this scale is, as it should be, Anubis, not Amit, who's holding the scales.
Right.
And if they fall, they'll be dragged into the sands where they'll stay forever. But the scales are having trouble balancing. So Tuaret says that they have some time to retrace their memories to set their souls right before they reach the end of this voyage. Now inside, they find the corpses of all the terrible people that Mark Spector has killed as he worked as Khonshu's avatar, as that warrior. But they also see this boy who's not dead, who's just kind of like running around like, come chase me. But Steven follows this kid into the memory, realizing that this boy is Mark's younger brother, Randall, a.k.a. Roro.
Ooh.
I don't know how you get Roro from Randall, but I love the nickname Roro. And,
hey, row, row, row your boat. Am I right? They're on a boat. So row, row away.
That's right. Well, these boys walk from what seems like an inner city alley barbecue to a random, easily floodable death cave in the middle of a forest, despite this being Chicago. Are there flood caves in the middle of Chicago somewhere?
Hey.
Where were they when Mrs. O'Leary's cow kicked over that lantern? Could have used a bit of extra water then. I'm getting married In August in Chicago. Am I going to warn my guests to look out for the flood caves?
You know, this is what happens. You let your kids watch the movie Morbius because they want to become Morbius. So they go into the cave and one of them dies. Don't let your kids watch the movie Morbius. Sorry.
I've read enough Plato to understand allegories of caves, all the symbolic imagery of caves. We see Batman, there's caves there. Thor went into a cave in Age of Ultron. Mm-hmm. And caves, I get. It's just like the geography of the city of Chicago, which is clearly a studio backlot with not a whole lot of extras. It looks like this show was shot in COVID, but like it is outdoors. You could have had just a couple cars going there. Just made me question, like, is this version of Chicago meant to be depicted as surreal? Because the Chicago I know does not have random forest caves that are within walking distance that flood that quickly and that easily in the middle of the city. I would understand if this were in like small town New Hampshire or Maine. If this were Derry and these were two kids from the Stephen King universe, yeah, I assume they have flood caves in Derry. Anyway, I'm overthinking this. I'm sorry.
Hey, man, you never heard of the Chi-Town Caves, man? They're everywhere.
I didn't know. Didn't know they were there. Well, Roro cannot Roro himself out of that water. So Mark's mother cruelly blames Mark for it. Mm. Very hard to watch all this stuff.
Yes.
And Mark and Steven then arrive at the memory of the dig site where Mark reveals his going AWOL led to him getting discharged when working for his old CEO, Bushman. They brought up Bushman's name.
Yes,
surprise like, to me.
Crazy dude.
Not a good guy. When they were working as mercenaries, Bushman led a gig to raid a tomb where Bushman just suddenly changed their plan midstream, killed all the witnesses, including Layla's father. Mark tried to help them escape, but himself got shot, crawled to Khonshu's tomb, where Khonshu took advantage of Mark's state and convinced him to let him take over Mark's body as his avatar. And I love that in this memory, they're even calling it out. Like, Khonshu, just let the man die. Like, what?
Right.
He's taking advantage of you. Death like, might be the preferred route here.
Like, I love how that was a callback to that the trial episode when Hathor asked Mark, do you feel like you're being taken advantage of by Khonshu?
Yeah.
And we can see very clearly here that Khonshu took advantage of a dying man, which is kind of messed up.
He totally did. Totally did. Now, back on the ship, Tuaret reports that up above, souls are just plopping down prematurely, damned to the Duat. Meaning, and I love this, Hera must have totally freed Amit from that Ushabti. He's now using it to just go to town on society. I
would
love
everybody.
To see what is going on up there. But Tuaret agrees to steer the ship around to the gateway of Osiris so that they can send a message to Layla to free Khonshu, to give Mark some healing powers, and I guess bring him back from the brink of death. To confront Harrow. But an argument between Mark and Stevens just triggers Mark, sending him back to Harrow's office, which leads to the dark memory of Mark's childhood bedroom where his mother abuses him. And child abuse, not easy to watch at all. Mm. This was really, really tough. And again, we talked about this. Tough to see anybody get abused like that, especially tough to see a kid get abused like that. But it's important that they show this. At least they don't. I'm glad that we didn't actually see it happen. We cut to outside the room. But we learn that this is the trauma that led to Mark's DID. And this is how DID will manifest in patients. Extreme trauma. Alters are often created as a coping mechanism to deal with that trauma, to disassociate from it. And in this case, Mark so wanted to disassociate from this woman being his mother, that concept. He said, that's not your mother, that doing so created this alter with a fully different loving mother. And what a cathartic reveal and explanation to why episode one opened with Steven calling his mom and signing off with the phrase, Laetus Gaetus. Like that is, it makes me really appreciate episode one that much more. And, It really explains why Tuaret is their guide in this afterlife, because these guys need a mom. They need someone
like,
to maternally take care for them and listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Watching what Steven react to like Hera calling his fake mom, it was just so, it broke me, man. Cause like at some subconscious level, he knew that his mom was dead, and that was so sad. So sad.
Yeah. And that's what we see there in the next scene, where Steven finally accepts the truth that his mom is dead. And I think that was an important arc for him. It was hard to see him go through that, though, to realize his function, like what the reason he exists. What a thing to realize for someone who thinks that they're a distinct human being without an altar that they have to share a body with. But now they're in the memory of Mark walking away from his mother, Shiva. And Steven tells Mark that it was not his fault. They have a critical moment there where they can hug it out. But at this point, the ship is nearing Osiris's gate. Their scales are still going back and forth. So those sand forms of Mark's past victims are now crawling out of the desert to try to drag him back into the sand. Steven fights them off impressively, saying he loves cricket, and he sacrifices himself, falling into the dunes, and Steven turns into sand. And right at this moment, the scales balance and Mark is transported immediately to the field of reeds as the sun rises. And that's where we are left this episode. No post-credit scene. No post-credit scene this week. So, all right, hopefully next week. I don't know. I don't really care if we have post-credit scenes in this show. I feel pretty good at where we're at. What exactly happens to Steven now? Is he gone forever? Does Mark still have DID? I mean, if not, the show is really going to take some liberties with how DID works, and we're all going to feel really weird talking about it. But where does this leave that mysterious third presence in that sarcophagus?
The shaking coffin.
But there are a few cool new projects going on at New Rockstars we want to let you know about. First, New Rockstars is on Tumblr.
Woo!
So find us continuing the Moon Knight conversation at New Rockstars Official on Tumblr. Jessica Clemens is actually over there making all kinds of fun content.
Jess.
Second, we are launching a brand new daily live show starting next Monday, May 2nd. It's called The Break Room. It's going to be live on the New Rockstars YouTube channel every weekday afternoon. You will not see MT and I every there because this is going to be live in person at New Rockstars Burbank office.
Right.
MT is in the Massachusetts area.
Yes.
I am in San Francisco. So it was decided that it would be more fun if everyone was in the same room. I agree. Watching the early test screenings, Tommy, Jessica, Brandon.
Literally
a lot of fun
the funniest people that you guys will ever meet. Like, go check out the break room because it's so
They crack me up. And then hopefully sometimes MT and I may be able to pop in on those shows.
Yes.
But it's going to be a really fun format. But if you live in the San Francisco area and you want to get a bit of extra Voss, I'm going to start doing improv shows at the Endgames Theater called Stageworks Theater on Valencia Street in the Mission starting May 14th, whatever the second Saturday in May is.
Ooh,
so
check it out,
I'll
guys.
Be posting more details on that. It's going to be really fun. The group they cast me with are hilarious. Like, you're going to love them. So,
dude, improv's always the best. If you want to laugh, go to see Eric.
But, of course, we all want to remind you to grab yourself a Moon Knight Latest Obsession shirt from NewRockstarsMerch.com. These shirts directly support the channel, and when you buy one at NewRockstarsMerch.com, you will unlock the ability to buy in a custom shout-out that's going to run along the bottom of these Inside Marvel after shows. So Eric says, do you think there might be a chance at a full-blown Kang cameo before or in the final episode? I don't think we'll see a full-blown Kang cameo in the final episode. Maybe in a post-credits scene. I just don't think we need Kang in this show. We already got the Easter egg, but...
Yeah, I don't think we need Kang, but, like, I think that we will get a Kang popping up and be like, hey, I'm still here. Come check me out in Quantumania. Something like that from Marvel.
I mean, we'll see that at some future Marvel property. But I think the jacket to Rama Tut was enough of an Easter egg just to imply that he's part of this history for me.
I'm good with that.
Kimberly asks, Anubis' Ushabti is always center and illuminated in the end credits. Significance. Kim, you might be onto something. The fact that Anubis' scales show up now in this episode to play such an important role. Maybe we'll actually meet Anubis in the final episode.
Likely.
And then Devin says, I want Layla's marshmallows. I want them too. They look yummy. I never really think of marshmallows as just a random snack food lying around. They get a little chalky if they're just sitting out. But I like this show has made me want to grab a
I'm a big fan of marshmallows myself, so I want all marshmallows, not just Layla's.
Yes. Send MT your marshmallows. MT is a Pete man. All right, MT, what's our big question this week after episode 5?
Well, Eric, we gotta ask, what the fish happens to Steven now? Because I'm not okay. I'm not okay seeing my best friend turn into sand.
No, it's hard. So Tawarit explains earlier in the episode that if the scales do not balance, then you get thrown overboard from the boat and the dead will drag you down in the Duat, where you will remain forever frozen in sand.
Like a real boat.
Yes. Uh-huh. So that means there are 4 scale outcomes when you think about it. Too bad, too good. So if the heart is heavier, you get thrown in the sand. If the feather is heavier, you get sent to the reeds. If the scales balance perfectly, good job. That's enough. That's reeds. Tie goes to the runner. But if the scales never balance, uncertainty, bad. You get sent to the sand.
Straight to jail.
So that seems to be the stakes of what's happening in this episode and in the final scene with Steven. He sacrifices himself while the scales are still trying to balance and falls into the sand and then himself turns into a frozen sand form of himself. But the scales have not yet balanced, and only after that transformation happens do the scales finally balance.
Right.
Now, the issue with this that we should talk about is that Steven didn't really deserve, according to, if it was just Anubis judging him on his own, Steven didn't deserve to get dragged into the sand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe the dunes operate by a kind of floor is lava rule, and just by touching it, that's enough to get bing-bonged. But there's also, like, timing questions with how this kind of judgment works. Because remember, Amit scales could judge people's souls at any point in their lives and be able to assess the whole of their lives. But the scales on the deck of the ship are not Amit scales. They are Anubis' scales, which Anubis is the correct purveyor of justice, according to Egyptian mythology. And according to Anubis and Tuaret, the judgment has a ticking clock to it. She gives Mark and Stephen time to try to get their souls straight. And this seems to be Anubis' rules based on the souls dropping from above. Amit, though, is in control at the moment. So Tuaret thought souls were being judged prematurely, but Mark and Stephen might want that kind of premature judgment rule to apply to them in this moment because it would give them a loophole to allow Stephen, perhaps, to get off of that sand and join Mark in the Field of Reeds. The problem is, I don't think Mark wants to be in the Field of Reeds. He wants to live. He wants Layla to free Khonshu so that Khonshu's healing powers pop out those bullets and that Mark can fight Harrow as Moon Knight in the above world. And based on trailer footage, I think that is going to happen in the final episode. There's going to be some kind of loophole from the gods. Tuaret may be pleading Mark's case to the Ennead maybe next episode, and they're able to say, you know, Amit sent a lot of people to... So everyone from this point forward, the moment Amit became active again, you're not dead. And that includes you, Steven. We'll see.
Joe Biden just signed an executive order pardoning everyone from the afterlife.
I think it's possible, though, we're forgetting, we didn't see this person this episode, that third altar in the sarcophagus. I still think it's Jake Lockley.
It's got to be
and
Jake.
And I think Jake Lockley could still be present somewhere in Mark's physical body, has not been sent to the sand or to the Field of Reeds, and is still there in the mental hospital. And I think Jake could take the wheel for the final episode as Khonshu's warrior. The problem is it's going to make us spend that chunk of the final battle with a character we have not yet met yet.
Right.
We don't know what Jake Lockley's like. Mm. Are we going to accept a new character just in the final scenes? Or is it going to feel like, oh, actually, you were there with us the whole time. And I am ready to see this guy fight, especially if he is a boxer, especially if that's why Mark's nose was broken, is maybe Steven got in a fight, because that looks like a boxer wound, doesn't it, in that opening scene?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like that, he looks like he got decked pretty damn hard. And I hope that, like, you know, in the comics, in the Jeff Lemire comics, there is a lot of, like, you know, patient abuse on the part of these two jerks that worked on this mental hospital. So, like, I wonder if we were seeing the same thing here with Harrow's people. I forget their names. Billy and Bobby, is that right?
Bobby, yeah.
Yeah, Billy and Bobby punching Mark.
And I think that much was implied, right? Mm-hmm. Like that, you know, Harrow was like, you're starting random fights. We saw them get, they, you know, medicated him, they sedated him. And then Harrow later gaslighted Mark and said, oh, that never happened. Like, so I think there's evidence here that they are hurting these patients and then just lying about it. Well, let's talk about Steven. So is he gone forever? Well, I don't think Steven is necessarily gone forever, just because those sand souls, first off, that were attacking them were also damned, but they were still walking around. So maybe Steven could live on as a sand person and just kind of move around those dunes as a lava monster dragging other people down into the pit. I don't know about that. But if Mark can get released from the Field of Reeds, Steven could get released from the dunes. I think that's going to be the simple way that they approach this, is that some of this stuff can get reversed.
Yeah.
But the show might also be saying, and this is not me saying I want this interpretation to be true, but the show could be saying that Mark achieving peace with the Steven altar and finally accepting that Roro's death was not his fault is his way of getting over his need for the Steven altar, and Steven might disappear from his subconscious at that point. I don't know about that, because I think the implication might be that Mark's scales might be balanced because Steven was now finally out of the picture. Like, the scales only balanced right after Steven hit the sand.
Right.
So the implication, at least based off of like the recency bias, would tell you that that is why they balanced. Now, I don't know if that's the best way to show how DID works, and the show has otherwise been pretty good so far. But again, based on the rattling of that sarcophagus, there is still another altar inside Mark. Oscar Isaac confirmed that there are more than two. So I think it's not like his DID is cured. And then what also we should point out, some other trauma might have created that altar.
Right.
Some other trauma that we didn't see in this episode. It seemed like this episode covered our basis of everything bad that happened to Mark. But maybe something else happened that in some history chapter that we didn't see yet, that led to Mark creating this third altar that's now in the sarcophagus.
I mean, it makes sense because, like, you know, Mark has this really dangerous line of work and he's a mercenary.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm sure he's going to deal with his fair share of traumatic events. So, like, I can see this Jake Lockley persona, or this altar rather, manifesting at some point during his very dangerous career.
Yeah. Ultimately, here's what I hope for the final episode. I hope that Jake, the Jake Alter, is able to reconnect with Khonshu. And then the warrior we see fight is really the best fighter of these three, is Jake. And that Amit overpopulating the Duat with it's raining evil men. I would hope that that is enough of, like, if that could convince Tawarit to turn the ship around, that might be enough to convince the Ennead to erase all the test scores, essentially. And that this series might end with Mark and Steven and Jake all living peacefully together, not blocking each other out. So I don't want this show to say, this is how you cure DID. Mm-hmm. Get a superhero, go to the Egyptian underworld. Like, I don't, and by the way, I don't think the show is saying that. Yeah. I think at the end of the day, all three of these alters need to, like, coexist and continue to live, but not block each other out. I think that's going to be the arc of the character, is that they learn to cooperate and kind of cohabitate in this space.
You know, for sure. I think that, you know, the idea of balance was a core part of this episode. And, like, you know, with Steven going off of the ship and, like, sort of like taking his heart out of the equation, the scales were balanced, because it's like, all right, the whole idea was for you to 100% know yourself, and now that Steven is now sand, you technically now 100% know yourself, so congratulations. Yeah. Welcome to the field of reeds. Right. I think that is going to be a huge part of what potentially gets Mark out of the afterlife or out of the field of reeds, is because we do have that sarcophagus that is shaking. And so, like, if that sarcophagus were to come out, then technically he's no longer balanced. So wherever Tawarit is on her way back, they're going to probably pop back and be like, hey, I'm back, because I'm no longer fully balanced, because, like, I don't fully understand myself because of this mysterious persona.
Yeah, Tawarit seemed completely caught off guard by having to judge someone with DID. Like, she, her script said, welcome, weary traveler. And she had to correct herself, oh, travelers, I guess, in this instance. So, and it, she said it'd even been a while since someone had gone through, which is interesting. Does that mean, like, not, like, in this case, Mark's afterlife takes the form of the Egyptian underworld, and by it's been a while, it means that only people who are real believers of this form of the afterlife actually did this version of it? Everyone else has been having different afterlife, like, someone had a Metallica-themed afterlife, someone had a Power Rangers-themed afterlife. No one has had an Egyptian mythology-themed afterlife.
I'm going to have a Power Rangers-themed afterlife. It's going to be great. Yeah. But no, that is a really good point, because we learned in a previous episode that, like, the gods left because everyone abandoned worship of the gods. So, like, it does make sense for, you know, Tawara to be like, all right, no one really comes by here. Like, because people haven't really, like, dedicated their lives to Egyptian mythology like you, Steven. So, hey, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, I think ultimately Steven is not permanently sand. I would be surprised if they just left him there. He's been such a wonderful character to spend this time with. I think this series will end with him back in Mark's body, or back in Steven's body.
I hope so.
I'm not gonna say who truly owns it. And I think there's plenty of ways the show can kind of alter the rules, especially if right now the reason Steven is there is because someone really altered the rules and like, cheating is happening left and right. Arthur Harrow using Amit to just plump people down in there. Someone's got to make a move here. Mm-hmm. I don't trust the Ennead to do it, but maybe Tawarit can. I think Tawarit will be her champion. Tawarit working with Jake Lockley. They're going to be the ones we get posters for at the end of this show.
I want Tawarit to have an avatar on Earth, because I want to see her more.
Yes. Oh, please.
God. That was so great.
Tawarit needs to be a permanent fixture in the MCU. 100%. Yes. All right, a lot of questions coming out of this episode. We'll talk about more of them, but first we want to thank Helix Sleep for sponsoring this episode. Even if you have magical armor that appears out of nowhere to help you fight crime, you still need a good night's sleep on a mattress made just for you. Our friends at Helix Mattress are here to make sure you have that. Helix Sleep is a quiz that matches your body type and your sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. They have soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattress is great for cooling you down if you sleep hot. Even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-size sleepers. Both MT and I have mattresses, and we love them. We're getting great sleep. So the mattress ships right to your door for free. No need to go to a mattress store. Just go to helixsleep.com/insidemarvel. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free, but they'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it. But you're going to love it. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/insidemarvel. We also want to thank Upstart for sponsoring this episode. We've all been hit by an unexpected expense or a bill. In times like that, it's normal to not know where to turn. Luckily, Upstart is here to help. Upstart-powered personal loans can help you pay down high-interest debt all online with simple, easy-to-understand payment terms. Upstart has helped over 1.8 million customers on their path to financial freedom. Whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high-interest debt, or funding personal expenses, Upstart can help you get one fixed monthly payment with a clear payoff date. Rather than looking at your credit score alone, Upstart's model considers other factors like your income, your employment, and other information provided in your loan application to find you a smarter rate for your loan. Check your rate in minutes for loans between $1,000 to $50,000 without impacting your credit score. You can even receive funds as fast as one business day after accepting the loan. Don't wait and check your rate today at upstart.com/marvel. That's upstart.com/marvel to check your rate today. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know that we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, your income, certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/marvel. And we want to thank MasterClass for sponsoring this episode. With MasterClass, you can learn from the world's best minds anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. You can learn how to sing from Christina Aguilera, improve your cooking skills from Thomas Keller, or learn to DJ from Questlove. With over 100 classes from a range of world-class instructors, that thing you've always wanted to do is closer than you think. MasterClass has a ton of great courses for film and TV nerds like us. I really enjoy the Danny Elfman class on composing. Elfman has done a ton of iconic scores, including the Tim Burton movies, Men in Black, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 1 and 2, Spider-Man No Way Home, the upcoming Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. He talks about how he started, he always starts a score from one or two of the most important moments in the movie and then works his way out from there. There are great classes from Werner Herzog, Helen Mirren, James Cameron, Spike Lee. All the masterclasses are shot and edited more like TV shows instead of boring lectures. They're engaging and easy to watch. I highly recommend you check it out. Get unlimited access to every masterclass. Get unlimited access to every masterclass, and the Inside Marvel audience can get 15% off an annual membership. Go to masterclass.com/marvel now. That's masterclass.com/marvel for 15% off masterclass. All right, MT, I want to ask you, what is currently happening on the surface world? Is Amit eating everyone? Is there a giant crocodile hippo lion that's going around eating souls?
I hope so. I hope it's like the end of the Suicide Squad, where just a giant crocodile be like, time to eat everyone. Why did you think I was a good guy, Harrow? I'm obviously bad.
People just screaming, the hell is going on?
It's just King K. Rool from the Donkey Kong series. Gangplank Galley is just blasting in the background. I think that what's happening in the surface must be pretty bad, because all these souls are plopping down into this underworld, this afterlife. So I think that the implication here is that Harrow has the power, the full power of Amit, because he only had a sliver before, and now he somehow accessed.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
We are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg, and who were you again?
I played Peter.
We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
This full power of, I think, Amit, in quotation marks, because something fishy is going on here, especially considering that Anubis, like you said, is primarily on the scales rather than Amit. Like, I think that Anubis, or some Anubis-affiliated entity, is messing with Harrow and wants more dead people in the afterworld. Maybe he's like lonely, or like he wants more power or something. But something's going on where Harrow is getting played. I don't think that Amit is the one fully doing this. I think Amit is the one getting blamed for it.
Interesting. I think Amit is true. I think Amit's just a little stinker of the bunch. Mm-hmm. I think Anubis is
a real
neutral.
Stinker.
That'd be an interesting take, MT. I like So far, I think Anubis is just, we've only seen the statue of Anubis doing it. Like, it's arguable maybe Osiris or the surviving members of the Ennead have been up to something. I think as far as Anubis is concerned, it really is a truly impartial judge. I would love to meet Anubis next episode to see what they think. Upstairs, it's got to be nuts because like in the past, Arthur Harrow would judge people just with this like slow process of using his cane one by one for each person. And that cane possesses just a shred. It's just, it was almost like a promise every time we saw this crocodile heads.
Right.
Like, it's just a it's a promise of what will be to come when Ahmet gets released. And I think, is it going to be Ethan Hawke writing like in the Neverending Story? Yeah! Eat him, Ahmet! That one's evil! Eat him! Woohoo! Like Boba Fett riding the Rancor at the end of that episode?
I would love that! Woohoo! The happy ending. Hera wins! Yeah! Let's kill it! While like all of his followers that loved her be like, Hera, what are you doing? It's like, I gotcha! Kill them next!
I mean, if not that, it's what is going on? He's just like having people who they thought were evil line up in train stations and like, okay, you next. Okay, now you next.
It's just
they
the
were
elderly.
Getting people fast. The rate at people falling from the sky into the Duat was pretty quick.
It was
they
a
were
lot.
Making short work of sending all those people to the underworld. So I'm just saying, there's some crazy shit happening
some
on the
surface.
Some
terrible things happening. Maybe Mark wants to stay dead because I don't want to go back to that. It looks very scary.
Yeah. Hey, it's like when the volunteers enter the swamp. Are you friend? You hear me, friend? You gator bait. Gator bait.
Hashtag gator bait. But no, I think that, and you mentioned Osiris. I think that Osiris could actually, hold on, I'm like crying because I'm laughing so hard. I think that Osiris could actually be like behind this as well, because like we know that from Tawaret that Osiris's portal was the only one that she could use. So like, I don't know. Something fishy with Osiris. I don't know.
I think you're right. Tawaret is right. I don't think Osiris is the like mastermind. I think he's just like, he's no good. I think the members of the Ennead have done some shit. I don't think he's like the mastermind. I just think it is Ahmet. I think there's enough for me to believe that it is just Ahmet who's been the way that Khonshu manipulated Mark. I think Ahmet is enough of just like a militant threat, an objective evil that's doing all this. Let's talk about Harrow's office in the Duat ship. I thought this is an interesting structural choice to continue. Is this show ever going to give us an objective answer on what the reality is? Or is this just going to be a theme of the show where we're always just kind of interpreting what reality is?
I think that, you know, in the case of Harrow's office, I think that is entirely a construct. Because like we said, like Tawaret established, like it's all just sort of just like all in within Mark's mind and how he manifests the Duat, which is an impossible to grasp concept. So I think that by episode, by the finale, like it'll be definitively like, all right, this is what real Harrow is doing. Real Harrow was definitely doesn't have a PhD. And like, this was all made up. So I think that
diploma wasn't even signed. I didn't see a university listed on that diploma. It was just like, you literally printed one off from the internet that just says, hey, when your kid wasn't, independent, diligent enough to get his college diploma, you print this off.
You put it in your office. But yeah, I think that it's going to be definitively like, all right, this was all within Mark's mind, and it was a nice little homage to Jeff Lemire's amazing run of Moon Knight.
Yeah, really, really great run. And I think I like it better this way. I there will always be hot takes that say everything that happened in the show was in Mark's mind, and I think that that's fair and valid to interpret it that way, especially with how Moon Knight comics are. I think in this case, in this show, everything that happened on this show, including the Duat, this voyage to the Duat is real. It happened to this character.
Right.
The point is that he is meant to doubt it, because that is how his mental illness makes him interpret this world.
Right.
I just think it's cool. I thought this was really well done. I think this episode, last episode, this whole series has been
like,
really, really
this
fun.
This episode is my favorite episode of the bunch so far, because like just because of the emotional impact it had, it was so good.
And I'll say that like it's so well done that unlike some of the other Disney Plus shows, going into the finale, I'm good. Like I don't I don't need some big cameo to happen. I don't need some big revelation to happen. I feel like I know what I need to know, and I'm good. Like I don't need any kind of big twist or connection to anything. It's answered all my questions at this point, and now I just need to see it resolved, which I think is where you should be headed into a finale.
Yeah, random question. Like, do you think Ahmet, like, if she is real, will take the form of Mark's mother? Like, sort of like to have this, like,
oh, that'd huge, be cool. Like,
that would be crazy. I would love that if he just got a chance just to be like, hey, mom, you're the worst. Pop! Even though don't punch women and don't punch your mom. But, like, you know, if it was a god impersonating your mom and the god was evil, feel free to punch your fake mom.
Now you're really talking about Suicide Squad right now, where Polka Dot Man sees, sees his mom.
So
I don't think we're going to be looking at that. I don't think they're going to have this woman come back and, like, savagely kill lots of people, and that's going to be the form Ahmet takes. But I could see maybe Mark having to reconfront some vision of his mother again, because she is in that mental hospital, which I just think is such a cruel thing for a trauma victim to have to go through. Like, you'd think that that person dying would just be the end of it, but no, to have to see their spectral presence. Her last name is Spectre, just like yours is. But speaking of that mental hospital, the third altar in the sarcophagus, if we assume it is another altar in there, what trauma in Mark's life, or even Steven's life, do you think could have created, if that is the Jake Lockley altar, what led to that creation? What could it have been? Steven and Mark didn't really realize that Jake is there, but Steven might have created that altar.
I love the idea that Steven created this altar, because, like, it's sort of inferred that this altar tends to come out when, you know, Steven and Mark are in the most danger. And, like, this seems to be, like, the defense sort of altar, where, like, you know, he's not like, I want to, like, punch everyone just for fun. It's like, I come out when my host needs me the most, like, to really defend him, because, like, I am the one that fights the best. Like, I am the fighter altar. And so I think that, like I was alluding to before, because Mark has this mercenary past, and because, like, he does a lot of, like, killing and dealing with people, I think that there's a stronger altar within him that comes out during those really intense moments of that Mark gets overwhelmed. It's like, all right, maybe I can't do this. And Jake's like, don't worry, I got this. Like, I know how to do this. And so, I think that maybe the trauma of just, like, his just terrible life of being a mercenary probably created this Jake Lockley altar. Yeah. As adults, but what do you think?
It seemed Mark had some interesting lines about his life as a mercenary. He's like, he even seemed to be forgetful of, like, he's like, oh, Gabon. Like, he remembered the places, New York, where he killed some of these people. But it seemed like even he was having a spotty memory. And he had this interesting line of the healing is a curse. Like the desensitization to killing all these people was a curse in and of itself. So it seems like, yeah, absolutely, Bucky Jake might have been created in order to help himself get through taking all these lives. I'm just curious, like, I assume Jake is going to show up. Is he just going to be Rocky Balboa? Like, what is he going to sound like?
He's probably going to have a really thick New York accent, which I hope that he does. That would be really great.
Yeah.
Because, like,
I mean, the fact that he spent time in New York, that was confirmed. Mm-hmm. He said New York. It's like, okay, then I assume that's where Jake was created. Yeah,
like, we're definitely going to see the New York guy again in some type of Jake Lockley flashback. Be like, I killed you. Gotcha.
You know, I guess Mark manifested Steven just in his Chicago home. It doesn't have to be where you are. It's the voice that you end up having.
Right.
That British accent was just pulled out of, you know, wherever. So I can't wait to see this final battle. I assume that sarcophagus is literally, like, the bullpen. Like, let me out.
I got shot. I don't like that.
Let's end this episode with just some wild hot takes for the finale predictions. So for the finale, I'm going to come out and say, I don't think Kang is going to show up in this show. I don't think we need Kang in this show. I think maybe in a post-credit scene to reveal him as Ramatut would be fun, but I don't need Jonathan Majors to step out and help in this battle right now.
Yeah, I think that at the most, we might get, like, an illusion, like, or a statue, and be like, oh, yeah, that was Ramatut, this blah, blah, blah. And Steven's going to be like, yeah, that was him. And, like, he's probably coming up later in another Marvel movie. But, like, that's probably the most that we'll get, because, like, we did get that symbol behind that on that jacket. So, like, I think that we might get some type of allusion towards Ramatut's influence to Egyptian society.
Cool.
But in terms of the finale, I think that Polka Dot Man's mom is going to be killing all these people when he wakes up. No, I think that, you know, whoever is truly behind this is has completely taken over or is completely just running amok and like at this pyramid and is just taking lives. I think that like this, wherever they are, is like really not great right now. Like there's probably like a huge beam in the sky like there is in every superhero movie. And just be like, all right, here comes death. And so Mark and Layla, because this is the final episode, this is sort of just like, all right, we have to save the day in this tomb. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, it's just episode 6 is just going to be them just stopping Amit entirely.
I mean, can we just take a moment to pour one out for the poor street level folks of the MCU who have had to deal with dusting, who have had to deal with celestial cresting, who now have to deal with a giant crocodile thing eating the kind of bad ones, eating their grandmas. Mm-hmm. Like, they gotta just be like, all right, just end it. Just get that.
Seriously. If you're a therapist in the MCU, you're eating good right now. You got business.
Yeah. Do we think there's gonna be any kind of multiverse mention? Any kind of connection to Multiverse of Madness? I mean, the finale will happen as Multiverse of Madness is coming out. Is that timing coincidence? Is it just whatever?
I think that there will be a connection to Multiverse of Madness. Like, in particular, because, like, when Tawaret first notices all these souls coming down, I noticed that she says, fear has taken over the real world. And I was like, fear. Because, like, I have this weird idea that, like, the fear lords of the Marvel comics, like, your despair, all your dark, your nightmares will factor into this next phase of the MCU. So, like, I think that maybe what we could be seeing is that a lot of these souls could be, like, from Multiverse of Madness. Like, who knows? Like, well, this could be like the dark souls that were being killed from the events of Doctor Strange. So you know, I think it'd be very interesting to see like that crossover there where like all the fear lords come back. It's like, ah, he helped us, all the dark people from the universe come back. Thank you, Hero, you dumb idiots, and you just made another doorway for dark people to come through. So I don't know, but that's just me. What do you think?
I think anytime that you pray for like a crazy Marvel lore cameo to come in, you want it to at least be grounded in the themes of the show. So Kang made perfect sense for Loki because it's a show about timelines. It's a show about destiny. It's a show about fate. And Kang is a perfect embodiment of those themes.
Right.
So with this show, the show is so much about like, you know, morality and identity and the judgment of one's soul. Like every episode has touched on that theme. This episode is central about that balance. So the fact that this Doctor Strange promo just came out showing the Living Tribunal showing up in Multiverse of Madness, like, and the Living Tribunal showed up in another form in the Void in Loki, I think it could be cool to just imply that there is some kind of cosmic hierarchy to the legal structure in the MCU, that the Ennead is responsible to the Living Tribunal in some way. So I assume that some part of the finale is going to deal with Tawaret, Osiris debating in the Ennead floor. So it'd be great if there could be some implication of there being a chief justice that they should take this to. And that answer to that question could at least just be presented in the background detail of that cameo in Multiverse of Madness. I love the Living Tribunal as a cosmic entity. I've been wanting to see them appear in some form ever since Infinity War. So I think this could be a great tie-in here.
Bro,
if it doesn't appear, I get it.
I love that idea so much because, like, you're so right, because they did appear in that trailer, but also the Living Tribunal as an entity sort of, you know, I don't want to say he has DID, but, like, he has three faces. And he has three different personalities. So I think it'd be a great, great inclusion for this show, for this tribunal, like the ultimate judge to be like, all right, Mark's all right. He can leave. He can leave the afterworlds. He's all right with me because, like, I sort of relate to him on a level.
Right. It can be argued that only the Living Tribunal is uniquely positioned to understand what Mark is going through. Mm-hmm. Like, the numbers are there. The parallels are there. It'd be cool. It'd be cool to see that.
I would dig it a lot.
That's
going
to be my reach. That's my reach pitch for where the finale comes.
I like that reach pitch a lot. I like it.
All right, we'll leave it there for this episode of Inside Marvel. Again, our Easter egg breakdown is going to come out to the channel tomorrow. Not today. We need some time to digest it. But later today, you will see my breakdown of the Living Tribunal cameo and the Doctor Strange footage. There's a lot of cool new shots from that Doctor Strange promo drops. So don't forget to check out our many great merch options at newrockstarsmerch.com. Follow me at EA Voss. Follow MT at Mass Entertainment. Subscribe to Inside Marvel wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for watching.
Leia's Gators. Oh man, it's a lot more sad this episode, but Leia's Gators.
Yeah, it doesn't feel as good to say.